is fuse box number 89, the Deuce Spot. And you are playing to a room of stiffs.
Yep, just the way we like them, all dressed up with nowhere to go. Hello, friends. Welcome in to fuse box number 89, lovingly entitled The Deuce Spot, and I'll explain that momentarily. I'm your just-back-from-a-three-month-long Borscht Belt reunion tour host, Mark Rose, feeling just plain frisky today, friends.
Should I give you some alone time?
Heaven forfend! No, let's just share the joy, shall we? And over there, caressing the controls and riding roughshod over those pesky transients, is the Deacon of Decibels himself, Milt Keynes, everybody.
So is spring kicking in there for you, or what?
No, not at all. Actually, just feeling particularly good today, you know? I have no reason for that. I have no clue.
It's probably a sign that a piano will fall on you.
Well, at least it will be musical, right? Friends, the title of this edition of Fusebox comes from an old vaudevillian term for that unfortunate spot in a variety show, typically referred to as the second act on a bill. It is widely considered by most to be the worst spot in the program, because the usual opening dumb act isn't really worthy of consideration by any, quote, self-respecting artiste. So the second spot was forgettably early in the show when the audience had not been warmed up to a good level of response. And, of course, that all came just before the big star, whose act would eclipse whoever played the Deuce Spot. So it's a stinky and thankless position right there. You know what I'm saying?
You know, that reminds me of those times back in the day when you had multiple bands on the same show.
Yeah.
And you just couldn't stand the other bands. You just wanted to see the one that drew you there, but you had to suffer through the 45 minutes of crap from the other ones first.
Yeah. I do remember those days. I also recall tickets that had folks like Pink Floyd, The Who, and Jimi Hendrix on the same night.
Yeah, probably cost you $6 to get in, too.
Yeah, exactly. Hell, wasn't Woodstock like $15 for all 3 days or something like that? Man, the good old days, huh? Well, now we have, of course, the Clone-ageddon tours. Every band, exactly the same as the one before it. By design, of course.
You know, I used to think We're just being like our parents were back then, you know?
Right.
How can you listen to that noise? Can't understand a word they're saying. Which, of course, was the idea. You don't need to hear what they're saying.
Yeah, right. And you know what? I get the analogy there. But for me, when a comparison like that was made by our parents, you know, like it all sounds the same and whatever. To me, at this point, It's not really about the indecipherable wash of noise. It's about the construction and execution. I can take the noise idea, and some folks, really, they use that to some great extents. But from a structure standpoint, it truly is the same song, the same style, the same effects, the same melody harmony lines. That's what drives me crazy. Sadly, most of this clonage is due to the producers themselves, who are following a line, as it was.
Sometimes a powdery white line.
Yes, that too. Cocaine decisions, as Mr. Zappa once wrote. And he ought to know. He had to go through the 1970s on Warner Brothers.
Man, there was more white stuff flying around back then than at a talcum powder factory.
Yeah. Personally, I never saw the attraction to that stuff.
Talcum powder?
No. Coke. I think the results of its use speak volumes. And to think, you know, way back in the day, that Coke was actually an active ingredient in Coca-Cola. And then that actually is the truth. It's not alternative history fake news or whatever. And as the inimitable Dr. John once aptly put it,
"To only users lose drugs."
Well, we'll take a swift break for some talcum powder, and when we return, we will, among other things, hear a brand spanking new review from our mistress of mayhem, the video vixen. Also, a new twisted epiphany and some great new additions to the Fusebox store to tell you about as well. So don't touch that nozzle.
We've locked Senator Bob Fuske inside this deep-sea diving bell filled with angry razor clams. But it's to prove a point.
No, no, stop it. Oh, no, stop. Oh, no, no, stop. Stop it. Oh, ow, stop it. Oh, no, no.
TheFuseBoxShow.com.
So, friends, let me just talk about a couple of developments that have just happened regarding the net neutrality issue. We've been following this subject for a while on the show now, and if you're not aware of what this is about, the quick summary is that in the United Snakes of America here, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, has taken, well, some might say, brazen steps to deregulate the internet provider system, meaning that certain less than honorable companies could, in theory anyway, limit the bandwidth to certain folks who don't pay the premium price for the fast lane or limit the methods of delivery for content. A whole bunch of evil crap, in my humble opinion. So many states and municipalities have already filed suits to rescind this ruling, as well as 23 attorneys general across the country. So you can see a few folks are disturbed by this idea. And a few days ago, the Oregon House of Representatives passed a bill that aims to restore the net neutrality protections. House Bill 4155 would require that state and local governments contract only with internet companies that abide by the principle of not giving preferential treatment to certain websites. And at least five petitions have been filed at the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington alone, with some folks like Mozilla. No, no, not Godzilla. Mozilla, developer of the Firefox web browser. And the video sharing website Vimeo leading the way. So we have an active fight going on, and I'm delighted to say that Oregon, the state our humble program originates from here, is among the front line in this movement. And the mayors of New York, San Francisco, Portland, as I mentioned, and a handful of other cities across the country are banding together to pressure internet providers to respect net neutrality standards. Seems that New York Mayor Bill de Blasio announced the city's open internet pledge at the recent South by Southwest conference. And mayors that sign the pledge commit to procuring internet services from providers that treat all lawful traffic the same. And, you know, it's just going to take a lot of action, folks. It's bad lawmaking at its finest, egregiously overreaching its authority. Right? To create this sort of money-gouging scheme for those shady IPs. It's frankly, it's the Netflixes, the Hulus, the Amazon Primes, and a host of other streaming services that would be essentially extorted into having to pay these higher fast lane speeds just to be able to ensure the quality that they already are delivering to millions of people. So no, bad idea. And if you don't think this is a good idea as well, I would urge you to add your name to the list of millions who have already signed multiple petitions. I know I have, so...
Yeah, you don't be messing with my porn speeds.
Oh, heaven forfend. They should tweak your feed speed, Milt.
Yeah, you want to see angry and ugly? I'll give them a new definition of the word throttle. Believe me.
Of that, I have no doubt, Mr. Keynes. No doubt at all. Oh, and you know what? Before I forget, you You, sir, might have some splaining to do.
Hey, that wasn't me, dude. I always remember to flush, especially after dropping a deuce, so you might want to talk to...
What? No, that's not what I meant. No.
So, what do I need to splain, then?
Well, sir, your ex called this morning and left you another schizo voicemail.
Oh, man. Let me guess. She's upset about the last show, right?
Well, you know, I guess some women don't like it when intimate sexual things are revealed about them publicly, just saying.
Listen, bro, that freakazoid went to church wearing a tube top once,
Church? You used to go to church?
Hey, there's more to milk canes than just a pretty face, amigo. I have what you call depth.
Well, speaking of depth, I'd say you're in pretty deep shit with your ex-wife.
Ain't the first time. Won't be the last time. All right, let's hear it.
Oh, you want me to play it now? During his show?
What? Like you and I have secrets to hide after four damn years together?
Well, if you're a churchgoer, I'd say you might have a few secrets left untold.
Another time, bro. Another time. Hit it.
All right. Well, alrighty. Well, you asked for it. So, alrighty then. Here we go.
Hey, asshole! You are such a piece of shit. You know that? I cannot believe. What the fuck? I have never... You are dead to me, fucker. Do you hear me? Dead! And just so you know, I have contacted my lawyer, you fucker, and he's gonna put your balls in a vice, asshole. You total asshole. You are good and fucked now, my friend. Fucked. I'm gonna fuck you in the ass sideways with a... brick, fucker. I will grind you into a fine powder and sprinkle you on my cornflakes for breakfast. By the time this is over, I'm going to put you on my credit card because I will own you. Do you hear me? Do you? Do you? When I am done with you, people will need a microscope to find what's left of you, you lousy fucking piece of shit, you asshole, you selfish, inconsiderate fuckstick. Fucking fuckstick. Fuck you. Fuck you to fuck, fucker, fuck you to fucking back, fucking fucker, you fucking fuck of a fuck! fuck you for being the fucking fuck you are, fucker, fucker! Call me.
Yeah. She's a delicate flower, that one. So, as we move ever forward here, you may recall a couple of shows back, I was chatting about this odd analogy that hit me recently, an analogy that compared, well, for the lack of a better term, the meaning of life with what is known as modular synthesis, which is a musical term for a series of little electronic noise-making boxes that are all strung together to make sounds. And I was commenting on how this notion struck me that we experience life, or can experience life, in a very similar fashion to how a sound is created in this modular synthesis idea, where we control the parameters of a sound by what we do to it. Well, a delightful thing happened as a result of that blatherment. A voice actor colleague of ours named Devin James sent me a note saying that he'd been playing around with this idea based on that rant, and came up with a little prose piece that might be a candidate for another of our spoken word segments called Twisted Epiphanies that we do on occasion. So, you know, give it a read and see what I thought. So I did. It's called Frequency Filters, and we had a lot of fun with this one. Devin allowed me to, as usual, have my way with it, sonically speaking. So, without further delay...
hosted, Epiphanies.
The signal I got
was flat.
No adjustments made or any of that. I had the freedom to take the signal and do with it what I wanted. I could make it sound amazing like a choir, or something that's hard to stomach. For example, let's say someone lays into you and gives you a mouthful. It's terrible sounding. The dissonance is palpable. But I can add a filter and morph how it sounds. See, I can take that right side up garble and turn it upside down. I can make it sound sweeter than they meant it to be. Then I can give it back to them through the filter of sympathy and empathy. See, what they unknowingly did was let you in on a clue that what's been wrong with them was taken out on you. See, if all they hear is noise, they have a biased frequency scanner. But if I bump the highs and the mids on a piece of their banter, and if I notch out the garbage and take out the bass, then their vocals find a place in my positive mind state. And what I interpret, I send back to them. They can now hear air in the frequency that they didn't intend. They can tune into something that isn't just static. Now the sweep of their problems is not problematic. And if they pick up my signal just for a second, they might take a minute to learn a new lesson. And that is, if I tune out the noise in that woe is me talk, I can still mix your message to hit my sweet spot.
Yeah, a piece there by Devin James called Frequency Filters. And frankly, if you enjoy things like that, we've got a billion of them, folks. No kidding. We've done quite a few, actually, and many of them live on a couple of, well, they're really early shows, right?
Yeah, it was Fusebox numbers 5 and 6. They were both called Twisted Epiphanies, parts 1 and 2.
Yeah, and in those programs, you get the whole enchilada, as they say, as we have an interview with author Lawrence Overmeyer as well. He was kind enough to let us adapt several of his poems for the productions, and we talk about that and other fun stuff. So, yeah. Seek those out, and if that tickles your fancy. And
You can always just search our show notes, too, for those things, and they'll direct you to the episodes.
Indeed you can. Another handy podcast tip from Marvelous Milt over there. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'd love to mention that...
Then by all means, do so.
I shall indeed mention that on the last program, you might recall, we were introduced to a new beverage experience.
Yeah, that's one way to put it, yeah.
Well, it's a brave new concoction introduced by our Japanese pocket squirrel brewmeisters, Iko and Milo. They called it Wildebeest IPA, and it was, it was definitely,
Wildebeest got your tongue?
Perhaps. Well, friends, it's just a thing you have to try to, fully appreciate its, earthiness and all.
Logo was cool, though.
Precisely, which is where I was driving this, albeit slower than your average wildebeest, monologue too here. Our colleague, Jeff Pollard, was somehow convinced to design the label for this unique substance.
Nico and Milo probably have something on Pollard. Probably pictures, you know, maybe a dossier.
A truly wondrous design that we took upon ourselves to emblazon on numerous items. Well, that is after being worked over by Milo and Eco for several hours with tire irons and rubber hoses, rakes, lawn furniture, and assorted antique mining equipment. Yes, friends, we have included several more items in the fuse box store with this catchy design, you might say, which you can see linked in the show notes for this very episode, friends. We make it so easy, don't we? Seriously, it's a fine design, and we recommend you check it out. And in fact, here's some more coercion.
From the untamed jungles of Portland, Oregon, comes yet another undrinkable IPA. Part lager, part ale, part stout, but all beast. Wildebeest IPA. Made of the finest barleys from Botswana, the choicest malts from Madagascar, and premium hops from Hillsboro, Wildebeest IPA will kick your thirst right in the balls. Wildebeest IPA. Taste the beast.
Mmm. Beastie.
Wildebeest IPA is not fit for human consumption. Please drink posthumously.
Yes, it certainly is. Try some today, friends, in one of those Wildebeest IPA emblazoned frosty mugs from the Fusebox store. Ooh. Crass self-promotion right there in front of you. It's despicable, I tell you.
You're soaking in it.
We have a brand new installment of the Video Vixen for your anxious ears, gentle listener.
Makes me happy.
Big surprise. I think it's the only reason you stick around lately.
Just saying.
Or are they? Indeedy-do. A new review from the Video Vixen, the first of the new year. And she's got a bunch of great ones coming up as well. But this first one is a wondrous 1970s calamity called Ruby.
Piper Laurie was frightening and scary. She is terrifying as Ruby. Christened in blood, raised in sin, she sweeps 16. Let the party begin.
Ruby, 1977. Director, Curtis Harrington. Stars, Piper Laurie, Stuart Whitman, and Janet Baldwin.
Our favorite bad mama, Piper Laurie, does it again in Ruby, the story of a former gangster mall mommy who owns a drive-in theater and has to deal with a series of gruesome murders and a possessed daughter. Has her former lover returned from the dead to get revenge? Is Leslie possessed? Does the viewer care? According to Piper Laurie and director Curtis Harrington, Nazi director Leni Riefenstahl of Triumph of the Will fame loved this movie. Why? Because it's evil and makes no sense? Who knows? What I do know is that this is a creepy movie that deserves more attention. Laurie does a fantastic job as a slutty former torch singer who somehow manages to rule over the bad guys who killed her gangster lover while dealing with a disturbed daughter and running her movie theater business. She was nominated just 1 year before for her role in Carrie, so maybe Piper Laurie was hoping for repeat praise, but Ruby isn't that good. Nevertheless, this flick is worth taking a look. Just make sure you seek out the 84-minute Curtis Harrington version and not any of the longer versions credited to that asshole Alan Smithy. Carrie plus The Exorcist minus budget equals Ruby. Check it out. I'm the Video Vixen. And remember, Behave yourselves.
Alan Smithy, indeed. You know the story there, friends, right? Anytime you see a director or writer's credit attributed to one Alan Smithy, it's because the aforementioned person did not want to be associated with the travesty of celluloid that flickers before you. That's usually the reason.
They made a bunch of those exorcist wannabes back then, didn't they?
Oh, man, did they. And you know what? All over the world, too. We had heads twisting 180 degrees and throwing up pea soup from as far away as, well, Indonesia, in some cases. Some films would simply be retitled, you know, to try to cash in on the success. But I recall an instance of a film by Mario Bava called Lisa and the Devil was not only retitled to House of Exorcism, but also re-edited as well to include new footage and then trotted back out there as a new film.
Liars.
Yeah, kinda. But in a vague way. In reality, it was a different film, the way they recut it. Pretty interesting, actually. Starred the very lovely Elke Summers and Telly Savalas.
Wait, what? Kojak was in that thing?
Yep. I won't spoil it for you as to what or who he plays, but...
Oh, man, I'm a big Telly Savalas fan, man. Guy was the perfect combination of a tough guy and...
Just a little creepy on the side, right?
Yeah, buddy. Just love the whole, who loves you, baby, bit and the suckers and all that. And...
Savalas had tentacles?
No, man, the Tootsie Roll Pop or whatever the hell he had in his mouth most of the time when it wasn't a...
Oh, it's probably a Red Hot, you know, just to keep him edgy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but he also smoked those long brown cigarettes, you know? What were they called? More.
Holy carp. Now we're getting nostalgic. I haven't thought about those things in years. He was like a poster boy for that brand, right?
Yeah, old Telly was a class act, man.
And evidently liked to work in obscure foreign horror films like The Horror Express with Peter Cushing. And stuff like that, which was actually around the same time as this House of Exorcism shoot, 1971 to 72. And I thought, what was
I'm
that?
Sorry, I hit the damn button. My head.
Well, there was certainly nothing vague. Thank you about Telly. There, saved you. I'm always there to help you. You know, always there. And with that, dear friends, we'll take our inflatable Milton Berle doll and shuffle on off to Buffalo, or wherever washed-up vaudevillians go to die, but not before thanking, with a robust outpouring of gratitude and honking geese, to our contributors, Laura Dine, Sabra May, Trista Perez, and Jeff Pollard, for making Fusebox more than just another pretty face. Also, thanks to our always quick on the... always Johnny on the spot, or is that Milty on the spot? Milt Keynes for technical aspirations.
Thank you kindly. I hope that doesn't fuck up my intern chances here on the show.
Way too late for that. And as always, friends, thanks to you for pushing play on this edition of Fusebox. It just wouldn't be the same, or even necessary, without you. Please like and subscribe to this fine program wherever you may have found it, be it Apple Podcasts or Podcast.com or Stitcher or the Overnightscape Underground or loitering in some bus depot in Altoona, whatever and wherever. We so appreciate you. And as we said, check out the new and fabulous Wildebeest IPA merch at the Fusebox store. We're not kidding. Take a look at it. Pretty cool. Which you can find links to at our site, thefuseboxshow.com, or on our Facebook page. We so humbly thank you for all and any efforts made in that direction. It'll keep the JPS in kibble and...
And hopefully not making more beer.
Probably not in our lifetime. which actually may be made shorter still by that IPA. I have been your meaning to get that sock drawer rearranged by color and texture host, Mark Rose, saying, until our next cartoon.